This is Digital Story Podcast number 836, March 29th, 2022. Today's theme is a pat on the back and a slap in the face. I'm Derek Story. The 4 days leading up to Sunday's Academy Awards was a deep dive into great filmmaking as I covered the Sonoma International Film Festival as a photographer for SIFF. In what should have been the crowning finish to the week, sank awkwardly to the bottom with a sad display of toxic male behavior. Here's more about the people that I met in Sonoma and my thoughts thereafter. I hope you enjoy the show. So before I take you back to Thursday morning with my first assignment, covering the now award-winning film Rosie and Frank, I want to say that the way I understand the world works is that you can't hit people because someone says something you don't like. And so based on that alone, not to mention all the other stuff, based on that alone, I am definitely not in the camp of Will Smith on what happened Sunday night, what should have been a really great celebration of a lot of wonderful films and some beautiful performances. But I'll get back to that in a bit, because what I want to do first is talk about a truly great experience that I had at the film festival as a photographer in three of the films that really stood out for me, films that you will probably see coming your way in the next, 6 to 18 months, depending on how the distribution deals work out and all that kind of stuff. So let's talk about the good, and then we'll circle back to what should have been the cherry on the night, and definitely wasn't. Okay, here we go. Three films. So here's what happened. I'm just going to give you a little tour of my week that started for me on Wednesday. My first assignment where I was there in a movie theater was on Thursday morning. So I arrived at Andrews Hall at 9:15 Thursday morning to cover my first film of the festival. And it was a film called Rosie and Frank. So in attendance, and this is the cool thing about film festivals, in attendance was co-director Peter Murphy and the lead actress, and I would love to say her whole name, but it's Irish, and it is Irish that I don't think I know how to pronounce correctly. It was Brid Ní Nechtain, and my apologies, Brid, for saying your name the way that I said it. But I wanted to say your name because it was so important to have the lead actress there for this beautiful movie, along with the co-director. So for the next 115 minutes, I was transported to a small town in Ireland where a grieving widow, and that's Rosie, finds her footing again with the help of a stray dog named Frank. Now, she was grieving the husband that she had been with for years and years. I believe they met in high school. And his name was also Frank, so it's not a coincidence that the dog is named Frank in this movie. Because as the movie goes on, this dog starts to show her things and knows about things, or apparently knows about things, that only Frank, her ex-husband or her deceased husband, would know about. And she's at first going, you know, stray dog, get out of here, don't bother me, to like, how do you know that? So what happens is with her, she comes out of this funk that she was in, and she was in a deep funk at the loss of her husband because of the love and companionship of this dog who was just insistent on being with her and showing her things that reminded her of her relationship with her husband. And it is a very well done movie. I mean, there are subplots going on. There are some twists and turns. It's heartwarming. It's well made. And this is the funny thing about it. They decided to do the movie in Irish, in Gaelic. And afterwards, they were asking Peter Murphy and also the lead actress about that. Like, why do it in Irish? You know, everyone speaks English, and they go, because we really feel like that the Irish film industry is coming along, is really making great strides, and we wanted to do something in our native tongue and then have, of course, English subtitles. Now, I don't know how you feel about subtitles, but for me, if it's a good movie, what happens is that about 5 minutes into the movie, I'm not even really thinking about the subtitles anymore. They just sort of become part of the whole experience. And I never have a problem with them, especially when they're done well, you know, where their location is good, they're easy to read, and, you know, they're well executed. That happened with this movie, too. A few minutes into it, I wasn't even thinking about the subtitles. And you kind of get to a point where you know what they're talking about, even though I don't speak Gaelic, but I don't know, you just kind of fall into the whole magic of the thing. And so that's what happened to me. So the movie, it provides insights about community, loss, inner strength, compassion, pettiness, sacrifice. And we got to experience all of those things in, you know, the course of a little over an hour and a half. It was really impressive. And I'm thinking, as I'm sitting there, wow, this is the first movie I've seen at the film festival, and it's like this? I mean, what am I in for here? And I was in for a lot more of that. As I left the theater, and, you know, the way my assignment works is I get there before. I take pictures of, you know, people getting ready. If there's interaction with the filmmakers who are there with the audience members, you know, I photograph that. You know, all the going on, it's just like you would any event. So I'm photographing that before it starts. And then once the lights go down, then I get to watch the movie, which is just like real cool. And then when the lights go back up, they usually have a Q&A with who's ever there from the movie. Sometimes it's the director, sometimes it's actors, sometimes producers. In this case, we had the director and the lead actress. And so then I photograph that, and then I photograph it all the way to the end, because sometimes there's some nice interactions outside after the Q&A. So I want to make sure I catch any of those moments, and then I get off to the next assignment. Then I go to the next movie, and we start all over again. Talk about a rough week, right? It was fantastic. And I remember that my feeling was, as I left the theater after Rosie and Frank, was that my faith in humanity and my respect for independent filmmaking were just glowing. I just go, I love people who are so good at their craft, whom I may never have heard of if I hadn't been at this film festival, to see what tremendous work that they can do. So I was really, really pleased. Really pleased with the start of the festival. As it turned out, on Sunday afternoon, Rosie and Frank earned the Audience Award for Best Feature. So I wasn't alone in this opinion that this is a terrific film. It's making the festival circuit right now. I'm fairly confident they're going to get a distribution deal. There was some talk that, you know, being in Gaelic with the English subtitles might hold back a distribution deal. And, you know, of course they said, well, you know, we will work through that the best that we can. So we'll see what happens. Clearly, it wasn't a problem at the Sonoma Film Festival, and I doubt it will be a problem at upcoming festivals as well. All right, so that's the first one. Keep an eye out for it, Rosie and Frank. So I saw four more movies as part of my, you know, work before I ended up returning to Andrews Hall on Friday morning for the screening of a documentary, this time called Blind Ambition, about a team of four who had to leave Zimbabwe for various reasons. At the time they lived there, there was a lot of unrest. There still is. There was a lot of poverty, which there still is. They have families, and they needed to find a way to get work to support their families and to survive. And it wasn't happening in their villages. They didn't know each other at first, but through a sequence, they ended up getting to know each other. And they had this one thing that they shared, which is a love of wine. So one thing led to another, and you got a lot of the backstory through interviews. This is a, you know, a documentary film. So through the interviews, you get a lot of the backstories. And then where it picks up in real time is that they decide that they're going to enter the World Wine Tasting Championship that is in France. And this is a big deal. And those of you that are in the world of wine know about this. This is an international thing. Teams from all over the world, team of four, they come. There is a list of, I want to say 10 wines, if I remember correctly. A list of 10 wines that's picked by the panel. And then, and they're from all over the world. Some are exotic. Some of them are not as exotic. And the whole idea is that your team of four tastes this wine without knowing what it is and has to be able to identify the variety, the region, the year. Blind tasting wines from all over the world. And it's just crazy. And you're just looking at this and you're going, how does anyone ever get any of these right? Right? I mean, if someone just poured you a glass of wine and they said, okay, you need to identify the variety, you might have a chance if you're an experienced wine taster. But then knowing what part of the world it came from and then what year, that's really something else. So you're thinking, okay, these four young men who do not come from a wine region in the world think that they're going to compete with the best in the world for this World Wine Tasting Championship. And the fact of the matter is that they finally hone their skills and they become truly competitive. We had the director there, the co-director, Warwick Ross. The other director, Rob Cole, wasn't there, but Warwick was there and he did a great job. What they showed us in this movie was grit, determination, undying optimism, and really the ultimate triumph of four young men who reinvent themselves before our very eyes. Now, I'm not going to tell you how the movie ends. I'm not going to tell you how any of these movies end because they all have great endings. And, you know, there's a good chance that you'll be able to see Blind Ambition at some point up the road here. But the thing that I really liked about it was that there are no excuses from these four men in the movie. No excuses for anything. When they had a failure, there was no excuse. There was only, let's go back to the drawing board and let's find out how we can do better. There was an ample display in belief in self. There was a ton of emotional intelligence. And these four men built a new life for them and their families. And we got to watch this. So it is really a terrific movie. And Warwick Ross, who was there doing the Q&A afterwards, you could just tell when he talked about working with these people, working with his men, his respect for them, and also just his love of this project. I mean, you think about it when you're going to make a documentary film, and it's something that's a little off the beaten track, such as this, such as most documentaries, really, when you think about it, and then to put all this time, all this effort, all this work, and you get the movie made, and then the work starts all over again as you hit the festival circuit, as you try to get distribution deals, as you, you know, all the things that you have to do. It's just amazing. And they're into it. They're dedicated, and they're ready to make the next film even better than the one they just made. Again, I wasn't crazy on my love for this movie, Blind Ambition, because it won the Audience Award for Best Documentary at the Film Festival, and it was well-deserved. It's a great story. It's a real story, and these are real people doing real things. Very impressive. So after Blind Ambition, I had five more movies to cover, five more assignments, and then on Saturday, I returned to Andrews Hall again. And I mean, this was the place I worked in the other venues, but Andrews Hall had the magic thing going on with the movies there. So I returned again on Saturday afternoon for a screening of Pretty Problems, which is a wild movie. Now, this movie is just coming off a win at South by Southwest. So it already had a head of steam coming into this, but it wasn't rated at the festival as, you know, one of the must-see movies. Not yet. It became that way. And this is a crew of young filmmakers. They knew each other. And they decided they wanted to create a comedy that follows a flailing couple on a getaway trip with very affluent strangers. They go down this rabbit hole with these people, these rich people, into this crazy, unhinged weekend, the most unhinged weekend of each of their lives. What's amazing about this movie is that, you know, you learn through their eyes that being rich does not mean being happy, and you really get to see how that plays out, even though there's all of this success, there's all of this money, there's all of this alcohol, there's all of this, anything that you want, food, costumes, you name it. They have it all. They have it all. So what happened was there was a couple screenings of this film at the festival. And this is a neat thing about festivals, because sometimes things begin to take on a life of their own. And that's what happened with this movie. So it showed at the first screening and got a pretty good turnout because it did have some notoriety from South by Southwest. But the people who saw it at the first screening just went nuts, loved it. And word started spreading like fire. So then the second screening on Saturday, the next day, sold out. And not only did it sell out fast, but there was a line of people out to the street. So I get there. I'm there my usual 15 minutes early. And I'm going, oh, they must not have opened the doors yet to let people in. No, they had already let everyone in, and they were inside counting empty seats. The cast and the director for the film, they were there. They agreed to give up their seats and stand and watch the movie so that another 10 people could get in there. And there were still people out to the street. So, I mean, it was just wild, the energy and the buzz that was already happening before the second screening of this movie at the festival. Of course, I get in because I have a pass, a photographer's pass. I could go anywhere I wanted at the festival, anytime that I wanted. One of the things that I love about having a photographer's pass is that you have this access. So I go in, I'm doing my photography inside, and of course I'm photographing a full house because that's really important for promotion next year, you know, to have these kinds of shots. So I'm doing all my work beforehand. And then I stay and watch the movie, standing up the whole time as well because there are, well, no seats, and I'm just lucky to be in the room. And this movie was insane. It's a great movie. It's funny. There's definitely some good messages in it. There's a lot of, you know, kind of dirty jokes, but not over the line dirty jokes, right? Just on the right side of the line. It has the whole deal. So afterwards, you know, the audience, standing ovation, right? So these filmmakers are in the room. I think this is only the second audience they've shown it to. And so, you know, when you make a film and you think it's good, that's one thing to think it's good. It's another thing to stand in a sold-out house and have everyone go nuts. It's another thing to be listening to them laughing at the jokes, ooh and awe when certain things happen. And when you get to be there in the room while this packed house is responding to your movie that you think is good, but you don't really know until it's in front of other people, it's an amazing experience for them. And I got to watch them have this experience. So afterwards, the whole cast, the director, the writer, they go up front for this Q&A, and they're misty-eyed, they're smiling, they're tickled. They're full of all these different emotions. And the interview begins, and they're telling us the backstory. They're taking questions from the audience. They're going on. And I was just watching, you know, kind of one by one, where it started to hit them that they had something here, that they had something really good. And you see that realization come over them. And they're standing in front of all these people, and they're having this emotional moment, and it is something really to behold. And, you know, I got some wonderful photographs out of this too. photographing this raw, beautiful human emotion. So like everyone else, I was just so impressed with the work that they had done. Unlike many of the other movies, this was a very young team. So they were basically out of college and they knew each other and they worked together to make this. You know, the writer would also act in it. I mean, they were doing all these things and it was this very, very professional movie. I mean, extremely good, extremely good. I honestly can't wait to see it again. So as a photographer covering these stories, you know, I tried to have like a professional relationship with my subjects. I don't talk to them too much, but I interact with them, you know, when I need to and, you know, do all the things that's professional. I'm doing my craft as well. But afterwards on this, after we got outside, I just couldn't resist approaching the movie screenwriter. And I just wanted to compliment him on the work that he and his team had done, because I was truly impressed. And he looked at me and, you know, he took my hand and he shook it. And he said, "My name is Michael." He goes, "What's your name?" And, you know, I told him. And he goes, "I just want to thank you for, you know, expressing your thoughts about the movie and for coming over to me and telling me directly. It really means a lot to me." And as I was interacting with him, in the middle of having this giant moment of glory, right, he was, how emotionally intelligent, how composed he was. And I was just thinking, you know, God, I hope you can hang on to that, you know, because you are so talented and your crew is so talented. And really, you guys can go anywhere that you want to go, you know, if you stick to your guns here and, you know, keep your emotional boat floating in the right direction. And so I was just thinking all these things afterwards. And it was the second to last movie that I saw at the festival. The very last one I saw, called Rickshaw Girl, which was shot in Bangladesh, was also a fantastic movie. So, I mean, it really ended the day strong. Pretty Problems went on to win the Jury Award for Best English Language Feature. I mean, that is a big time award. It's a movie that we're gonna see. It's kind of, for those of you that follow films, it's a kind of a combination of Sideways and Nine Perfect Strangers. So those of you who are in the movies, you'll know what I mean. It's like that, and it's just really cool. So my overall impressions of Thursday through Saturday was I met artists who had been in the business for 40 years, while others were celebrating their first recognized feature film, the whole spectrum. And when I was heading home Saturday night, I was just really glowing with pride and respect for this community of artists who represented themselves and their craft so well. I feel like photography and filmmaking are kindred spirits. There's just a lot we can learn from each other. There's a lot of crossover. So when I see these artists in filmmaking do well and create great stuff, it makes me happy for what I feel like is the extended community of visual artists. And, you know, so I'm thrilled. Of course, we're doing audio here as they do audio as well. So, I mean, there's just a lot going on here. So when I was heading home, you know, Saturday night, I was just really feeling great. I was tired. And I was also looking forward to Sunday, the Academy Awards, because I had been following those movies as well, you know, and I had a lot of, I mean, my personal favorites, I had three personal favorites of all the movies that I saw that were nominated for Academy Awards. Belfast, which I just think is an absolutely beautiful movie. Coda, again, a fantastic movie. And Macbeth, which I thought Cohen did with that, and I thought Denzel Washington was spectacular in Macbeth. I was really looking forward to the Sunday night thing being like the crowning glory to my week of immersion into film. And as I started to watch the show with a family, one of the first things I noticed that night that was different than what I had experienced in Sonoma was that there was this biting humor that was kind of running through the evening, even before some of the big tragic events. Now, some of this humor was funny, but a lot of it wasn't. Some of it made me downright uncomfortable. And then, as we all know, what happened a little bit later in the evening, the ultimate downer, the immature display of male toxicity that transpired between Will Smith and Chris Rock. And I might add, that was Best Actor nominee and ultimate winner, Will Smith. You know, not just some guy from the back of the room. This is a guy that was nominated for Best Actor, has a pretty good film pedigree, sitting in the front row or close to the front row there. Then we all know what happened, where Chris Rock told a terrible joke. Should not have told it, in my opinion. But instead of talking to Chris later on, instead of doing any number of other things, Will Smith storms up onto the stage and slaps Chris Rock and slaps him hard. I mean, it was a hard hit. One tweet that I saw afterwards was, we learned two things tonight, that Chris Rock can take a punch and that Will Smith can't take a punch line. It was just disgusting. I think it's ironic that this crazy whirlwind of a week immersed in filmmaking allowed me to see the best of the community and the worst of the community, you know, all in, you know, the span of 5 days there. The best, for example, acceptance speeches by Troy Kotsur from CODA, Ariana DeBose for West Side Story, Kenneth Branagh for Belfast, and Questlove for Summer of Soul. I mean, really great speeches, really well-deserved awards, the kind of stuff that just makes you go, I appreciate your artistry and your hard work. And then also best of the week were the dozens of filmmakers that I met in Sonoma who open-heartedly shared their struggles and triumphs. I mean, I was so impressed with them, and I'm pulling for all of them. You know, we can learn so much from each other, photographers and filmmakers. And so my takeaway, my final takeaway here is, keep an eye out for the movies that I mentioned here, because I know those people, I met those people, and their movies are terrific. And they really represent the wonderful side of filmmaking that I like so much. The other stuff, they are who they are. We'll find out how that sorts out. But the overwhelming majority of artists are not those bad apples. Mac Studio Teardown reveals the SSD is upgradable, but blocked by Apple. And here's the article. It says, after opening the computer, which Apple apparently did not make an easy process, the YouTubers discovered that there was an extra SSD port visible after removing the first layer of components and casing of the device. After just removing the rubber ring on the bottom of the machine and the screws for the very bottom case, the extra SSD port was clearly visible in the corner of the device. The two determined that it meant that if a buyer opted not to max out the storage when placing an order for a Mac Studio, it would theoretically be possible to add a new SSD in this extra slot at a later date. They discover with the extra port that the device still cannot be upgraded as it appears to be blocked by Apple on a software level. So the advice, my conclusion to last week's story, is totally incorrect in that, you know, if you only have so much money, you know, put it in RAM and put it in the processor, because later on you would be able to upgrade the SSD based on what we saw, that open slot. That's totally wrong. It appears that you will not be able to upgrade that open slot there. And they were even doing things where they took the SSD from another Mac Studio and tried to put it in, and it didn't work even there. So there must be like a firmware key here or something like that. So it's cool that there's that open slot, but it appears to mean very little to you and me. So what I said last week about upgrading, cancel that. When you buy a Mac Studio, if you buy a Mac Studio, get everything you need the first time around, because we don't really know what that extra slot means. All right, I have a fun list for you. Best enthusiast mirrorless cameras for around $2,000 in 2022. This is from imagingresource.com, and you can read the entire article there. So basically, what they do here is they have 9 cameras, I believe, And when they say around 2,000, they're really going up to like 2,500 on this. Okay, just so you know this. So I'm going to read you their paragraph, and then I'm going to give you the 9 cameras that they think are good recommendations for enthusiasts like you and me. In this article, we're going to provide recommendations for excellent enthusiast class mirrorless cameras from several manufacturers. However, we're also breaking up our list of suggestions into 2 categories. The first one will focus on enthusiast mirrorless cameras priced under $2,000, which is a popular price ceiling that many camera buyers are likely to limit themselves. However, when reviewing the field of potential cameras to recommend, we notice that several options are just above that $2,000 mark, and it would be a shame to leave them out. Therefore, we have a second list of recommendations with a few remaining options priced a bit higher than $2,000, but still within this same general enthusiast territory. Here's this list, and this is the fun list of cameras, by the way. We have 9 of them. The first one, their recommended cameras, Fuji X-T4. Number 2, and I don't think this is in any particular order, by the way. Number 2, Nikon Z6 Mark II. Number 3, Olympus OMD EM1 Mark III. Number 4, Panasonic S5. Number 6, Sony A7 Mark III. Then followed by the Sony A6600, followed by Canon R6. Then we get to the OM System OM1. And rounding out our list is the Sony A7 Mark IV. 9 cameras. All right. All of them terrific. Some, of course, I like better than others. I love it that 2 OM cameras got in there. And, of course, a couple Sonys, a Panasonic got in there. A nice-looking list. So I thought that was just kind of fun. I have it in the show notes if you want to take a look at it. But that's Imaging Resources recommendations for cameras in the $2,000 range, roughly speaking. Asterisk, asterisk, quote, quote. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our podcast week in and week out. You can learn more about becoming an Inner Circle member by clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. Go over there, take a look. And a big thanks to our existing members who have been with us, many of them, for quite a long time now. I so appreciate your support. You help keep this community vibrant, and you help keep this podcast on the air without having to resort to terrible commercials. God bless you. All right. And I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. These are the folks that put the guru in printing. They have everything that we need in terms of supplies. They have all sorts of nice little goodies that make our print jobs look even better. Fine art cards, envelopes, glassine sleeves, all the good stuff. They have ink, they have tutorials, they have reviews. They have community, and you can go to their Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper and learn about that. They are the folks that put the fun in printing, but also put the quality in printing, both with their paper and the knowledge that they share. A huge thanks to our longest-running sponsor of The Digital Story, Red River Paper. Click on the tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story to learn more. Bryce is going to do it for me this week. If you enjoyed the show, it was quite an experience. I'll be back next week with more good stuff. Until then, stay safe, be creative, be kind. See you next Tuesday.